Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 311th episode of Think Again, a programme produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change for more than a quarter of a century. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we're looking at some converging fractures in our society and seeing what we might learn from Europe's Nazi past, and what is currently happening in the US.
Yes, and what better place to start than the recent protests in Melbourne? Yeah, the rivers of people converging en masse and clashing on the streets of Melbourne CBD on the last Sunday of August seemed to perfectly reflect the convergence of some of the deep fractures in our society, not least the fractures in late capitalism, with too many people struggling to cover the basic costs of living and struggling to have an affordable and stable place to call home, apparently many ripe for blaming the lack of adequate infrastructure and affordable energy and food and life opportunities on the migrants. So what I mean is those disenfranchised, struggling people are probably, some see as a group ripe amenable to hearing about the scapegoating of migrants. So it was a convenient political diversion, no doubt, especially for the far-right fringes and the local Nazis who suddenly found a mainstream platform to cleave open the fractures of life dissatisfaction and grafting their messages on already long-existing racism. And converging with anti-racism protesters, of course, were the pro-Palestinian marchers who have been meeting every Sunday at the State Library for nearly 2 years now. Reflecting and amplifying the international cleavages wrought by Israel's escalation of its seemingly US-approved genocide against the Palestinian people of Gaza.
Which are, at the same time, cleavages happening in Australian society. Not only because so many Australians have connections with the people of Gaza, but also because we have all seen and are still seeing visions of the violent attacks against people and the places where they live, including children and including hospitals and schools.
And we also import the political cleavages and divisions happening in the dysfunctional US at the same time as we kowtow to its leadership. Kowtow to its leadership and work to connect ourselves inextricably into a future with the US military, you know, via AUKUS, etc. And nuclear submarines. And this, despite knowing about the material and political support the US keeps giving to Israel, which is enabling its genocide in Gaza.
And of course, there is the deep fracture, never healed, never closed, caused by the invasion and settlement in this continent and the ongoing systemic genocidal onslaught on First Nations people here. That fracture was on violent display on the 31st of August in Melbourne, with a group of Nazis inflicting awful violence on Aboriginal people at their permanent protest site called Camp Sovereignty, the Nazis being left to roam with menacing impunity with no police in sight.
Yeah, as The Age put it on its front page the day after, Melbourne CBD roiled with protest as anti-immigration and counter-demonstrators clashed repeatedly and a large number of police were stretched to cope with a shifting struggle that ranged through the city's streets for more than 4 hours. And obviously more than that, counting what happened at Camp Sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been told by pro-Palestinian protesters, I didn't happen to be there at that particular protest that day, but I've been told by pro-Palestinian protesters caught up in the crowd crushes and clashes on the day that it was chaotic and frightening, with quite a few afraid for their own health and safety and that of others around them, some with serious health problems. A friend witnessed violent fist fighting against anti-fascist protesters by neo-Nazis, and there were many similar accounts, and much of it live streamed, of course, with a wider population witnessing it all. So it was a harrowing day, with my friend and others having moody realizations that the kind of civil warfare currently mushrooming in the US is not altogether absent from Oz, and that was in my friend's words.
So how was all this represented in our mainstream media? Well, as pointed out by Dennis Muller from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, the media's coverage of the rallies across 8 Australian capital cities gave an unintentionally, and that is in quotes, sanitised account of what occurred.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned the quotes, Jacques, because I wouldn't bother with the word unintentional, as that really seems to give the media an out for just not doing their job.
That's right. As Dennis Muller puts it, and I quote him, "The main misjudgment was to persist in using the organisers' description of the rallies as March for Australia and anti-immigration after it had become obvious that the emotional dynamo behind it, all of that was racism."
Mm.
End of quote. While some, if not most, people joined in because they were generally opposed to immigration for reasons not connecting with race, but with issues such as housing, the fact is that the leadership of the Melbourne rally was provided by the National Socialist Network, a neo-Nazi organisation.
Yeah, which became abundantly clear as events on the day unfolded, especially in Melbourne and Sydney. As Muller says, the real racist intent and purpose behind the rally was clear, with the main speakers at the rallies in Sydney and Melbourne being from the neo-Nazi organisation, the National Socialist Network, including their leader Sewell in Melbourne,
and also
the purpose behind the rally was clear with the violence by local Nazis against Aboriginal people at Camp Sovereignty, as you mentioned before, Jacques, clearly having nothing to do with immigration. And really, we don't use the term first peoples for nothing.
It's still not understood, I think. And that is also not to mention that organisers of the racist rally were the National Socialist Network, despite the secrecy around this. One of their organisers instructing rally promoters beforehand to use messaging about protecting Australian heritage of all sakes, which he said meant, of course, white heritage.
Mm.
And as Dennis Muller pointed out, organisers drew on the great replacement theory rhetoric in a flyer singling out Indian immigrants and stating that the growing and increased Indian migration to Australia is intended replacement, plain and simple. So that means for them that replacement of white people.
Mm.
So there's the message to appeal to those white people struggling to make ends meet. Blame the migrants. They are coming to replace you.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal and clear, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Meanwhile, another Dennis, Dennis Glover, wrote an interesting piece in the Saturday paper in early September, arguing that we have to deal with the real threat of these Nazis, drawing on 7 lessons of Nazi history. That's in Europe, up to World War II, of course. While the article is worth reading in full, I'll just repeat. We'll just repeat three of Glover's lessons from Nazi history that seem particularly relevant, and I'll quote him in part. So, lesson two: beware unexpected catastrophes. Nazis are waiting for catastrophic events to favour them. In the 1928 elections at the Reichstag, the Weimar-era German parliament, Hitler's Nazi party won just 2.6% of the vote. So I'll just emphasise that. 2.6% of the vote the Nazis got in 1928. To continue, they were an irrelevancy, or so most thought. Then in 1929 came the Great Depression. As Germany descended into political gloom, the Nazis were able to pose as national saviours, offering a simple and appealing message of national redemption. They provided a voice for the voiceless, a conspiracy theory to explain the catastrophe, and enemies to blame. How familiar does this sound as our own Nazis rail about imaginary violations of their freedom of speech, denounce immigration as the cause of every problem, and vent against recent migrants and Indigenous Australians.
Mm. Lesson four, according to Dennis Glover, and we quote, I quote him again, never acknowledge that they may have a point. While politicians may think it clever to try to wean people away from extremists by acknowledging their discontent, this only provides legitimacy for dangerous ideas. The mainstream conservative establishment in Germany was complicit in this by waving through the persecution of Jews.
Yeah. And then Dennis Glover's lesson six, don't give them an even break, by which Glover means don't let them off the hook in relation to usual criminal penalties and punishments. In 1923, Hitler attempted a coup in Munich, aiming to take over the government of Bavaria and march on Berlin to seize power. And boy, this does sound familiar.
Mm.
It failed, and Hitler was arrested and tried for insurrection. Instead of being given the death penalty, which I don't advocate for, but instead of being given the death penalty, he was given a comfortable prison cell where he wrote Mein Kampf before he was released early and his party re-legalised. And we know how that turned out.
Absolutely.
So as Dennis, to quote Dennis Glover, when Nazis brazenly commit crime, they should be penalised to the full extent of the law, because anything less will only embolden and enable them to come back for more, unquote.
Mm. And Glover concludes, and again, we continue quoting him because he says it nicely and succinctly. We got a glimpse of this in Melbourne this week. After the completion of the rally, the Nazis were free to leave, seemingly unwatched. And what did they do? They staged their pogrom at Camp Sovereignty, where they allegedly battered First Nations women. 2 days later, their leader interrupted a press conference by Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen and was finally handcuffed and arrested outside the Melbourne Magistrate Court, along with two associates in relation to the Camp Sovereignty incident. The Nazis mean our community nothing but harm, and believing the promises that may make to moderate their behaviour is naive. End of quote. So after all this heavy stuff, let's listen to You Build a Wall by Grace Petrie.
I know it's hard to keep the flame, but tomorrow's ours to claim. Sometimes a battle cry sounds like a lullaby. Tonight I think we need them both the same. To everyone who's scared of what they see every time they turn on their TV, to everyone who's listening to me, to every single kid I used to be. You build a wall, we'll build a ladder. You fall in leaves, dead from the branch. And you'll see how much a snowflake matters when we become an avalanche. You build a wall, we'll just get higher. You don't learn to fight from privilege. Hide in the dark and we'll light a fire. You build a wall, we'll build a bridge. We'll build a bridge. Up in your palaces of gold, your day's already growing old. For all the ways you tried to conquer and divide, your ruin will be all the lies you've told. Compassion lives in every single land, and we're made of something you can't understand. Stronger than the weapons in your hand, bigger than the armies you command.
You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we were talking about the emerging fractures in our own systems and in the US.
Yeah, and turning to the US with its polarised politics, with the people glaring against a great chasm rather than a fracture, just look at the reactions to the fatal shooting of public right-wing activist Charlie Kirk, who actually I didn't know existed until recently. Mm. A divisive figure, it seems, suddenly up for canonisation, even with echoes of praise coming from the left. And they seem to have forgotten some of Kirk's reactionary right-wing beliefs, like, excuse me, what amounts to a woman's place is in the home, reflected in this great advice given to Taylor Swift. One, quote, reject feminism, submit to your husband. Taylor, you're not in charge. I think Taylor Swift should get married and have a ton of children. She should have more children than she has houses. That's my challenge, Taylor. If she has children, she'll stop this liberal nonsense. One of the reasons she's been so annoyingly liberal is that she's not yet married and doesn't have kids, unquote. And I just want to reiterate, that wasn't my views, that was Charlie Kirk.
Yes, and Charlie Kirk spoke openly against diversity, equity and inclusion projects, even saying that if a black pilot was flying an aeroplane he was on, he would think, boy, I hope he's qualified. In general, minorities and marginalised people were very much in his fire, and he didn't hold back, calling Martin Luther King awful and not a good person. But amidst all the accolades to Charlie Kirk, all of this was ignored, and in most reports about circumstances around the shooting, there was hardly a mention of guns. That is, too many of them and too much easy access to guns in the US.
Yep.
So just for some context, the US is known to use their 1.5 guns per person across the population quite regularly, leading to around 30,000 gun deaths yearly, and that regularly for political purposes.
Mm.
But it's the official reactions to Kirk's shooting that we want to focus on, really.
Yeah.
Rising Up commentator Sonali Kolhatkar offers a penetrating insight of the shooting's aftermath in her article and podcast, and she titled it, "They So Badly Wanted Kirk's Killer to Not Be a Straight White Man." They, of course, meaning Republicans like the Utah State Governor Spencer Cox, and people like Trump, of course, and these true believers and their media amplifiers.
Yeah, well, in Australia, Sky News immediately found that the killer, Robinson, shared a flat with another man who was said to be transitioning from male to female.
No, that's right.
They didn't waste time.
No. And there was a massive conservative outburst in the US against some imagined international radical left undercurrent, with all the usual suspects, including the Democratic Party, some fake news establishments like the New York Times. Sort of, they were suddenly suspects in Kirk's shooting, if you want. And according to US Vice President Vance, those lefties needed to be totally uprooted so that they would once and for all disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Utah state government Spencer Cox needed to be careful in his speech and not say anything to do with guns. And after all, Kirk himself had said in one of his speeches, and I quote him, "I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun death every single year, so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our God-given rights," meaning, of course, the right to have a gun.
Yeah, so it seems some chickens came home to roost for Kirk.
That's right. Utah Governor Cox's speech was widely praised, Kolhatka reports. As unlike Trump's and Vance's war on the left reaction, he called for and promoted unity.
Mm-hmm.
But still, in that speech, he felt compelled to say that he hoped the killer wouldn't be one of us. By which he obviously meant a straight white man.
Yeah, as you said before.
But then it was a straight white man.
Yep.
Or straight, whatever you mean with straight. From when Kirk was killed until the killer was captured, conservatives called for war as they spread their ideologically constructed story that Kirk was killed by someone resembling not one of us, but someone from the rest of us. So conservatives who have mainstreamed political violence, centered racism, transphobia and misogyny, and accuse everyone in their sight of faking news and of wokeism, they are lecturing everyone else about political violence, for God's sake. As Kolhatka and other independent news media commented, it's not surprising that US liberals or Democrats have almost totally fallen in line with the Trump-Vance story.
Mm.
For example, in the New York Times, there was Ezra Klein saying that, and I quote, "Kirk was practicing politics the right way."
Wow. I'd hate to see what the wrong way is. Anyway, that's a sentiment I also heard expressed on ABC's Planet America, of all places.
Exactly.
So echoes of it here as well.
Yeah. Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, likely Democratic presidential candidate in 2028, he said, and I quote him, "We should all feel a deep sense of grief and outrage at Kirk's killing, and the best way to honor Charlie's memory is to continue his work," end of quote.
Mm-hmm.
A man who has made so many outrageous racist, anti-LGBTQ people comments, once suggesting loudly that we, and I quote, "We need armed militia to prevent the diminishing and decreasing of the white demographic," end of quote.
Wow, armed militia.
That's right.
Wow, and that's the governor of California.
And
of course that echoes.
No, that was Kirk who said
that. Was Kirk.
Yeah.
Right.
But he said that politics needs to go on. That
but
was
Kirk,
Newsom.
Perk rallying, sort of rallying up people towards having an armed militia. And that really echoes the great white replacement theory promoted by our homegrown neo-Nazis, as we said before the break.
That's correct. In Rising Up, Sonali Kolhatkar concludes that in many ways, and I quote her, "centrist liberals are continuing Kirk's legacy by appeasing right-wing extremists and throwing those of us who are women, people of color, LGBTQ+ immigrants under the bus in their eagerness to praise the late Kirk."
Yeah. So, are there any lessons for us from all of this? That's the question.
I agree. A good starting point would be to look at our own scapegoating of migrants for political advantage. wisdom elders, as I call them, Patricia and Don Edgar, they reminded us recently in an article in Pearls and Irritations of Liberal ex-PM John Howard's Aussie Battler stories, appealing, and I quote them, appealing to the disenfranchised battler being threatened by supposedly illegal refugees invading our borders and undermining traditional Aussie values, just like the pre-World War II Nazis we spoke about. They provided a voice for the voiceless, a conspiracy theory to explain the catastrophe and enemies to blame. End of quote.
Yeah. So to paraphrase Patricia and Don Edgar, in John Howard's case, this blame shifting took the form of lies about boat people, meaning migrants and asylum seekers coming to our shores by boat. Even the big lie that they threw their children overboard, mm-hmm. as in the Tampa incident in 2001, blocking Indigenous land rights and spreading alarm by telling Australians that they'll lose their backyards. And then there was his black, what's called his black armband critique of history, or his critique of what he calls black armband history, really, criticising historians who dared to suggest or report violence against Aboriginal people.
That's so, right. Yeah.
So, and as to quote Patricia and Don Edgar, the pub test became a populist yardstick for social policy and Trump lights flourished, unquote. And that was before Trump.
That's right. Of course, Howard is also remembered for his progressive gun policies after the Hobart massacre.
Yeah.
But the rest of his legacy remains the undercurrent for much of the coalition's standpoints. As well, many of our recent Think Again programs have critically responded to the unwillingness of the present Labour government to actively and decisively undo many of the legacies of Howard's and neoliberal policies and legislation. Think about the recent arrangements with Nauru to keep storing unwanted asylum seekers who turned criminal in Australia. Or think about the various economic equality issues we have covered in our previous programs. And indeed, the recent discussions about immigration and housing.
Yeah.
As Amy Remakis comments, modern politics has created the perfect storm for a lack of trust in government and, by association, fractures in our society.
Yeah. So more than ever, I guess we have to think, their government leveraged and generated fractures, really. I just want to make that point too. So I guess more than ever, we need to think, critique, speak up and resist.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Just a little.
And together create, I guess, better ways of living and organising ourselves.
Which is also what our, just to quickly shift to community announcements, what our conference in mid-October, 16, 17 and 18 October in Footscray is going to be about revitalising, regenerating communities. You will have heard about me saying that, or about us saying that repeatedly already. Go to our website, info@regeneratingcommunities.org.au.
Or the Borderlands website and go to What's On for the link. So thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, email borders@borderlands.org.au. Excuse me. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au.
Meanwhile, please enjoy Milkamana by Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.